You're listening to the Inspire Excellence Podcast, recorded at the BVA headquarters with your hosts, Troy McClain and Tommy Ahlquist. Each episode is focused on shedding new light on different perspectives to create dialogue that inspires excellence.
Hey, everybody, this is Troy McClain and Tommy Ahlquist with another episode of Inspire Excellence. This week, we've got John Williamson. John, thanks for being on board.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Absolutely. So, John, you run the incubator.
Accelerator.
I'm sorry. I'm glad that you corrected me on that. Yeah. So you run the accelerator at the BSU campus, correct?
Correct. For the College of Business.
Tell us about it a little bit.
Yeah. So it's actually a partnership between the College of Business and Economics and the world's very first venture accelerator, venturecapital.org, which was founded in Utah, way back in 1983. So it formerly was known as the Wayne Brown Institute.
Okay.
But it's an organization that I was familiar with for over 20 years in my banking career. And it was just interesting how full circle it came back into my life here in Idaho. So it's an organization that I think is poised to make a great difference for the Idaho community, and I'm excited to be part of it.
So Tommy and I have talked a lot about acceleration, incubation, mm-hmm. and innovation in Idaho. And we've seen firsthand our own experiences and seen kind of the pros and cons of it. You came back from Utah. You were in Idaho originally.
Yep.
And went to Utah, discovered an accelerator. Give us the difference between an accelerator and an incubator and what set you guys aside? Because I honestly don't know.
Yeah, well, the incubators, I mean, you know, this is kind of a co-working space. So if you think of entrepreneurs, what's their peer group? I mean, they're going out trying to do things that nobody's ever done before. They're running the show. And when you think about the ideas of success, a co-working space is a place where you can co-mingle those innovators. And okay. So they may be solving a different problem, but the process of solving the problem is a shared experience. Mm. And so the concept of the co-working space, the incubator, is to pull those resources together so you have peers to work with, where otherwise you may not have peers. Accelerators are simply a way to speed that process up. Mm. And accelerators do different things. The one that I'm involved with really tries to accelerate the relationship between the entrepreneur and the source of investment.
And What do you have that you need? Is it a degree that you get? Is it the Rolodex or the connections that you have? What makes it unique?
It's really access to a community. So okay. If you think about companies, you know, the simple equation is no bucks, no Buck Rogers.
Right.
It takes money to make a company work. That's really what the Wayne Brown Institute and VentureCapital.org was designed to solve. The founder had this fundamental belief that you improve the human condition through commercialization of technology. Mm-hmm. But how sad would it be if you have an idea that could change the world and it never comes to market simply because the person didn't know the source of money?
We talk about that a lot.
Yeah. So that was the problem that was seen. And for very successful entrepreneurs who've run this gauntlet, mm-hmm. if you have that experience, if you have those connections, there may not be a great deal that we can do for you, but for that first-time entrepreneur who's never done this before, who needs to build these relationships, that's a real struggle. And your odds of being funded are probably about 1 out of 3.
So I love the question, Troy. And so now we do have a lot of people listen to this that are mm-hmm. in business, entrepreneurs, have done startups or maybe in different parts of their career. Can you get down to the specifics, if you will, of what you kind of do day-to-day in your
sure.
organization? How it ties in with university and what resources might be right here at our own BSU that we all love so much. By the way, the baseball's going fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
but right here that people may not know about where they could plug in.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, and the beautiful part about it, you know, we're housed at Boise State. And I'm grateful to the Dean of Business for giving us this opportunity. But this is a program that's open to anyone across the state and any student from any university to participate.
Really?
So there's two fundamental programs that we focus on. One of them is called the Cooperative Venturing Network. And what this is the community. This is the main resource. It's entrepreneurs who have raised money and had success.
Okay.
It's investors who have selected early stage companies mm-hmm. and are pretty good at it. And the third group that comprise this network are really C-suite experts in helping companies scale.
Okay.
So an intellectual property attorney, a CFO for hire, that type of expert. And what we do is we invite the new entrepreneur in. And it doesn't have to be a student entrepreneur. Right. You can come from anywhere.
I wasn't aware of that. I think that's good. It's open to anyone.
Yep. Some of our teams are student teams, but the vast majority are actually entrepreneurs from outside of the campus coming in to work with us.
Wow.
And what happens is we surround these individuals who have got a really good idea. They've come up with a great concept, a way to disrupt an industry, mm-hmm. or maybe enter a whole new industry. But we try to surround them with people who are experts in understanding commercialization.
Yeah.
There's a big difference between ideation and commercialization. And a lot of innovators get stuck on the innovation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a process. And what we have to do is really work with these entrepreneurs to work them through the process. You know, an idea by itself can be interesting, but it may not attract capital.
Yeah.
Because what most people kind of fail to understand, or they may not think of first, is that the investor is really investing in the entrepreneur and the ability of that entrepreneur to create a return, regardless of what their idea is. Now, they have to have a real solution to a real problem that people will pay money for. That's a big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But
I think what you just said is super important. I hope, I mean, you said it kind of fast, but... But don't you think, Troy?
Oh, you keyed on it just like I did. I was like, that's the main thing.
So just repeating that again, you're investing in the person. You're investing in the and I've heard this from so many people that invest in startups, that invest in new ideas or whatever it may be. It's you're investing in that person. And then the second thing you said was you're investing in their ability to turn a profit.
Yes.
Exactly.
That's often forgotten. And you run into this in all sorts of business, which is people own stuff for pride of ownership.
Right.
They do things for pride of ownership. But in the world that you're in, it's not just the idea. It's just not the innovation. It's commercializing that innovation and making it profitable. And that is its separate skill set.
And it's mismanaged expectations. I had a personal positive experience in going through a course where we did a pitch to the investors. And I had a personally positive, great experience, but I had managed expectations on what I was looking for. I was looking for feedback. I was looking for fine tuning. And some of the other people that we talked to, they're like, I thought I was going to get the money. I thought I was going to get the money. I'm like, man, you have to manage your expectations. You don't go in with just an idea and get the money. It's being able to show that you have a profitable, scalable, and provable company that matches people's acquisition criteria. You're one of the most endearing and aggressive investors in a particular vertical that is healthcare and real estate that I've ever seen. But he's healthcare and real estate with technology. And I don't think people understand investment acquisition or acquisition criteria is not I'll invest in everything. I'll invest in the things I know. You've said no to things that are outside of your scope.
Well, I'll tell you, you learn to say no to things, right?
Boy. Yeah, you do.
Because you learn from experiences where you either picked the wrong thing, got the wrong story, read it wrong, didn't pay enough attention to the profitability, which leads me to the next question. I can't wait for Troy. I mean, the one nice thing about being around Troy is I've never seen anyone grind like he does, right? he's got a nose for this, right? He's got a nose for a deal. He's got a nose for profitability. He's got a nose for business, right? It's just natural, just build into him. But sometimes what I've heard over and over again, and I can't wait to get your takes, the idea may be good, very sound. The pro forma might be great. The pathway to commercialization and profitability might be there, but the amount of dollars to get you there are not enough. And I've heard that be a criticism of some angel funds. I'm not saying some of the ones around here, maybe I am, but the amount of dollars available are just so small compared to what's needed that right out of the gate, the reality of achieving success really was probably never even an option because there's just not enough fuel to make a thing happen. Any comments on that?
Well, when you think about it, there's a lot of things going on in that discussion. But when you think of early stage investment, it's much more risky. So the appetite becomes a real function of how big those checks are.
Mm-hmm.
You want to diversify that risk. And that can be a heavy lift, particularly in a market that may not be as deep of an investment community as others, to go around and round up those checks. So early stage investment is really, really hard. What this network does is it provides additional diversity to that process. So it starts to break down barriers and borders that may exist in a local market. So if you're going to angels in the Idaho market, and there's some very good ones, and there's people that have smart money that can make you better, but you're probably going to have to talk to a lot of them.
Yeah.
And what if what you're working on isn't in their wheelhouse?
Yeah.
You know, where do you go?
Yeah.
We have a network of over 700 mentors, and it's a regional network. And it's kind of that friend of a friend mentality.
Yeah.
The reason our companies succeed is when you win the support of a mentor, even if they're not ready to write a check, if they're willing to make that introduction, that's the acceleration effect. That's the connectivity that's made venturecapital.org so successful.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. And I'm glad that you touched on that as well, because again, it's managing those expectations. People go in and I've had the same mismanaged expectations. Like, well, I understand it. As an accredited investor myself, I've been able to write big checks. But then as a money raiser to into new startups, I'm like, well, I don't understand it. Like, it's this. You're in the same boat. But it's having those managed expectations. But I like that you mentioned kind of the billboard effect or the network effect. And in all honesty, I can say, I know Tommy Ahlquist, and that opens a door. Mm-hmm. I can ask Tommy, hey, I don't need money. I just need you to introduce me to somebody. But it's managing the brand reputation and the extension of that brand. I know not to let that brand down. I know to represent the brand in this manner and fashion, because he's only going to extend it once. Mm-hmm. And the one time I mess it up, he'll never extend it again. And I think what you guys teach and what you talk about as well is maintaining that brand reputation.
Well, that's part of it. I mean, obviously you're building a brand for yourself, but the more important thing is you're building a team. So when you say, okay, I want to go and work with Tommy, what is Tommy going to bring to the equation? You touched on a number of things, the biggest one probably being strategic partnerships, relationships. How is Tommy going to make you better? So I often tell entrepreneurs, you know, when you go out and you're running this gauntlet, raising money is really hard. All money's green, but it's not all equal. And you've got the ability to be strategic about this. You know, you're hiring your next boss effectively. Yeah. So who do you want that boss to be? And how are they going to make you better? That's a big part of what this relationship is. And then the great part about partnering with Boise State, you know, we talked about the mentoring program. Here's an opportunity where last year we launched 37 mentor teams. Okay. Each one of those is a different entrepreneur. Some of them may go through the program more than once, depending on the event that they're doing. But these are unique experiences where you have party A who wants money. You have party B who has money. And they kind of duke it out. What they're really looking for is
kind of like a match.com thing, well, speed dating.
It's like Shark Tank on steroids. Okay. Yeah. You know, here's a chance where this innovator's hopes and dreams and passions, everything's on the line. This is his baby. And these mentors are going to be very, very frank about just how ugly that baby is.
Yeah.
And it can be a grueling experience. But what it is it's a test of character.
Yeah.
So think about the students who are working with us, who are interning and seeing this develop.
Yeah.
They're going to go out in the world. And if they're entrepreneurs, now you're better armed for this conversation. If you're an investor, you have a better understanding of new venture funding. But if you're going to work for somebody, and maybe that's a business-to-business play or a business-to-consumer play, you're developing relationships. You don't learn that from a book.
Yeah.
You learn it from experience. And so we've created this experiential learning opportunity with every company that we help to help these students understand how you develop these relationships.
Yeah. And the biggest thing that money moves differently in different industries. So certain industries will talk profit models, EBITDAs, P&Ls. SaaS, software as a service industry, talks CLTV to CAC, CAC recovery. Mm-hmm. And they don't chase profit. They chase growth. I was new. I literally did not understand that. I'm used to just chasing profit. And all of a sudden you get involved in a software as a service company. And I wonder if both your investors and or your people pitching, if they understand that. Because what we've had is mismanaged expectations. We've pitched to seasoned investors that don't understand SaaS. And they'll go, it's the dumbest model I've ever seen. Then when we finally got money, we pitched to a SaaS company, SaaS investors, and they're like, how come you haven't knocked on our door earlier? This is the greatest thing I've ever seen.
Yep.
I didn't know that there was two different. I thought, well, that guy, they understand it. So how do you guys teach that, or do you go over that?
Well, again, you know, part of it is, so we do these deal forms, and here's this safe environment where you can go in and make your 10-minute pitch.
Okay.
Now, the nice part, and this is the educational part that we bring to the community, is if you're an entrepreneur and you're knocking on doors and you get told no, that's probably the only thing that you're going to get told. There is no transparency of process. So what we create is a safe environment known as deal forums, where we coach you up, you make your 10-minute pitch. We're going to have you make that pitch in front of an audience and in front of 4 to 5 accredited investors. But what benefit we're going to provide is those accredited investors now have to give you 20 minutes of critical feedback of this is what I liked and why, this is what I didn't like, and here's how you could fix it. But that panel provides diversity. So you might have an IT guy who understands the SaaS model. You might have a life science investor, and they're going to be looking for different things. And they're going to look at the same deal and see two different outcomes. Now, that's something that we can't change.
Right.
But if we can help the entrepreneur understand how to attract the broadest base of investment, they have a better chance of survival. Now, here's the data that becomes really, really exciting, though. I got involved with this mainly as a means to help improve the community.
Right.
So you mentioned Salt Lake City. I watched the evolution of that economy go from an old world economy to a new world tech center. And this organization, VentureCapital.org, had its fingerprints all over that.
Yeah.
If you look at the history in that marketplace, they mentored nearly 850 companies that went on to Investors' Choice. This is kind of the pinnacle event where the best of present every year. In that market, over 35 years, 850 companies, nearly 70%, 7 out of 10, found success at raising their money within 12 to 18 months.
Wow.
Which by itself is great by comparison to other accelerators.
Sure.
But what's more impressive is nearly 80% of the companies who raised money were still in business more than 10 years later.
Oh, wow.
Now, that's important because you hit a Series A, most likely, you raise more money. And today, those alumni companies combine to employ 45,000 new economy technology workers.
Wow.
Which transformed that economy. The great part is it's a process, and it's a process that we can teach here. So when I started this program 3 years ago with Boise State, the idea was, can we take the brand of the College of Business and Economics, increase the visibility in the Idaho market, and get the same results? Well, we've nearly tripled the number of entrepreneurs who are participating in the program.
Wow.
They're going to Salt Lake City. They're going to the Investors' Choice Conference, and they're raising money.
And no cost to the innovator?
There's a nominal cost to participate at Investors' Choice. It's the conference. If you were to attend the conference, it's about a $600 fee.
Oh my gosh.
If you're a presenting company, you pay $500. So you actually get a discount. There is an invitation because they are a 501c3.
Yeah.
VentureCapital.org will invite them to do a pay it forward program, which is basically if you value the mentoring, when you have money, come back and make a donation. So it's a warrant program.
I don't think even, you know, I've went through this. I don't think I understood the whole gamut of what you guys offered either. Okay. I'm going to make up a hypothetical question.
Sure.
Tommy and I decide we want to launch a company together and we're looking for deal flow. Is that something that we would say to you guys? We'd say, here's our deal flow. Here's what we want you to vet. Or is, how would that work?
Short answer is yes. But what we would be looking to do is vet that through our process.
Okay.
So the main thing that we're looking for is it a company or is it a product? We want to work with companies. So there needs to be the basis of a go-to-market strategy. We don't help write business plans. But having said that, when we help mentor these companies through the pitch, we really strip down the business plans and rebuild them. And what we're looking for is a real solution to a real problem that's either going to be an effective speed to market play or one that has real intellectual property protection. We're looking for a team that's coachable because, you know, this some entrepreneurs who don't react well to this process. And, you know, they probably won't react well to investors if they don't like the venture process. But, you know, if it has the ability to scale, that's really just more of an economics question. Mm-hmm. An investor, for the risk that they take, they need that unicorn opportunity. A lot of people, you know, you can say it's greedy, but they're going to lose a lot of money on taking risks that nobody else is willing to do.
Yeah.
And so the ability for a company to scale and have the potential to generate the return is a critical part. And it doesn't mean that a company that can't scale is not a viable option. It just may not be suited to investment capital. It could be a great business, but there's probably a better way to fund it.
I think that's another critical, what you just said. I mean, this isn't for every company, right?
Yeah.
Right? Many successful companies have found a way around this and are very successful, but it just wasn't the right type of company to get out there and and grow this way. Let me ask you a question. You've been around a lot of businesses, starting businesses. What are some of the top three mistakes you see businesses make?
I think, probably the most common one is you have a solution and then you go looking for a problem. So you've created something really cool and people should throw money at it. But you may have to hunt for a problem. You know, it could be that the market validation just simply isn't there or as big as you think it could be. But more often than not, I think probably the biggest thing is going to be the team itself. Mm. You know, one of the short rules used for investment are to consider the five T's. And the T's are technology. It's traction. Do you have clients? Mm-hmm. Do you have revenue coming in? The team that you have. Mm-hmm. 10X, does it have the ability to scale? And what are the terms? But I think if I were to go back and think of every investor that I've talked to, the top three things that they'll tell you that they invest in are team, and team.
Yeah.
And most startups don't have money. You know, it's a real problem.
Yeah.
So their interest from talent is usually founders or people that can understand the potential of what this company can be, but the reality and demands of life make that talent, it's very hard to find the right people sometimes if you can't pay them right now.
Yeah, I just, personal story, you know, when I started, so I'm in 2001, just out of residency, fresh out. So just started as a doctor, really. I mean, I'd been working as a doctor, but not a attending physician until I moved to Boise and I started my first company, StatPad. So it was a technology company.
Yes.
And I look back at, you know, why we were successful. We just sold it after 19 years in business. But it was the team. And I didn't have any money. So, it was Craig Rasmussen, who was my accountant, who was this seasoned veteran who had just helped many, many people start businesses and was the sage, wise one in the room that had said, hey, I've seen this mistake made before. We're not going to do it this way. Mm-hmm. He understood business plans. He understood, I mean, you look at what he taught me. I've always told him this. I've told him this many, many times since then. It's the best education I've ever received in business was my experience with him as a partner.
Wow.
And so it was Craig Rasmussen. And then we had the doctors. It was a medical business. It was me and my partner. Neither of us had started a business. And then we had another partner, Rick Johnson, who was a sales guy, had spent his entire career with FedEx as a sales guy. And there was a sales part of this whole thing. It was our team. And you look back and I've had several people say, well, why did you give up the idea so early on and give away all this equity? And I always quickly say, listen, without the team, we had nothing. The cards are stacked against you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, any business that starts, it's going to be harder and challenges are going to be abundant. And just when you get over one, here comes the next one to just blindside you. It's going to cost more and take longer than you ever think it's going to be. So the whole business was successful because of the team.
Right.
And in my case, it didn't cost us anything. We were able to stay out of debt. Yeah. It was everyone putting in sweat equity and kind of rolling this out and learning a lot along the way. I look at where we started, what we thought we were, I love what you said too about, you know, you have a solution, but what's the problem, right? And we didn't have the problem. We had the solution. Yeah. And we had to find the right problem we were solving. And I think people listening, that's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. sometimes you start a business with a great solution and then you go searching for the right problem, and that will drive which way you go, and just wait and keep trying to find the right problem. Because the second we found the problem we were trying to solve, guess what?
Boom,
there we go. But it still involves sales. It involves sage business practices, essentially a team. And that's why we're successful.
But I love what you said, that people are giving you a hard time about giving up equity. It's all a founder has.
That's right.
That's the only exchange.
What else was I going to give
them? What else are you going to give them? you can't give them your birthday.
Yeah.
And so I tell people, listen, you do what you can to get yourself launched. And there's criticism on, hey, you gave up too much. You gave up too little. You should offer this. You should offer that. I said, you did what you did to get the deal done.
Yep.
Once you're up and running, then you have more options. How do you teach that though? Because there's a ton of entrepreneurs out there like, hey, I don't want to give up anything. Mm-hmm. You got to do something. It's the only thing you have to exchange.
Well, there's a trade-off. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, it's really the question of, okay, do you want your idea to sit on the shelf or do you want to make a difference?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It boils down to that simplicity. What's the trademark for venturecapital.org is to start, find money, change the world.
Start, find money, change the world.
Change the world is a really hard thing to do, but a lot of our companies are doing it.
Yeah.
It costs money to do that. And so it's what is that trade? How much are you going to give up for the opportunity to make a difference?
That's right. And the other thing is, I think one of the things that lacks, at least in my opinion, is teaching creative financing. So when I finally did find our money, I had to get creative with it. I said, listen, I'll do it just like with KPIs. I'll let you tranche the money. So commit to X amount of dollars, but tranche the money. And if I don't hit my projections, don't let it go. Yeah. But I need the first tranche to hit my projections. And I'll tell you what, that's been the best successful relationship I've had, because I hit my tranches. And all I do is turn to the team and go, you want the next 100 grand? Hit your numbers.
Hit your numbers. Yeah. So to add on to that, I look at the companies I've started that have failed. And you go back to some of the things you brought up. It was the team, right?
Number one.
And so it's really interesting to bring that up. And Troy, I love that. I love, you got to believe the numbers. You got to set realistic expectations and control yourself, right? Because a lot of times we just fall in love with an idea. We fall in love with, and then the last thing I'll say is sometimes the first time out is the best time out. It's really hard when you're married to an idea that you're passionate about, that you grew, that's your deal, right? And you're saying, I'm going to make this work. And for every reason in the world, it looks like it should work. You have the solution. You found the problem. You're passionate about it. You lay in bed at night and think about it. And it is so hard when that idea is failing for whatever reason to actually believe that it's failing and say, okay, I got to move on. And boy, that would be the other advice I'd give for anyone listening is consider when it's not going well, what the exit is, and don't fall in love with an idea that's going to.
Well said.
It's another thing.
I don't know if you talk about failure, but I love that us seasoned entrepreneurs, I have talked recently. I said, man, I was blessed with the opportunity to lose 100 grand. The business, nobody stole it from me. Nobody cheated from me. I invested it and the market spoke, but it was back to the team.
Yeah.
Just the wrong team. But I was blessed with that opportunity. I think a lot of entrepreneurs see it as, I'm only swinging once at this ball. No, if you're an entrepreneur, you swing again and again and again.
Yeah.
And so don't get offended by the first no. Don't get offended by the first failure.
Oh, yeah.
You run into that at all?
All the time. Yeah. I mean, you know, when you're raising money, it's great when you have the story to write about the success. Mm-hmm. But I think we do a bad job talking about what it really took to get there. You know, when you say you had failures, I think it's great that you talk about it. I think it's great that you talk about the learnings from it. I don't think you should champion it. I mean, obviously, you know, it's, okay, we failed. We know it doesn't work. Now we're going to find a better way. Learn from it and move on. But for whatever reason, you know, that was something that I saw as a dynamic in Utah that was a more open conversation.
Sure.
And if you look at capitalism, it's interesting to me. When you look at California, for instance, it seems to be far more communal. Now, in some instances, you have organizations who, you know, celebrate failure because now we know we can't do it.
We are talking about the People's Republic of
California. but you know, you're talking about a more robust ecosystem.
That's right.
And they recognize the value of that failure. There are a lot of very successful people in Idaho who don't talk about the failures that they had to reach the pinnacle of success that they now have.
But you know what? Because I think also I agree with you, but I also think we have filtered listening when we're entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. So I will tell everybody over and over again, my path to success has been paved with the bricks of failure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which I'm trying to articulate and illustrate. I have failed more than I have succeeded, but I just kept grinding that out. And what I find with young entrepreneurs is that all they heard was my path to success.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, you're missing it.
Well, and the other thing I think that I hear you talk, and I've learned so much from this guy was, there's a difference between calling it quits on an idea and going into a business expecting multiple mm-hmm. failures along yep. the way, right? So I think when we talk about failures, we got to categorize them. There are, I mean, any business you start, and mm-hmm. I'm in a couple of them right now, every week we face failures. You could look at them that way. I mean, because you just get slapped and say, what just happened? We did not expect that. And then you respond to it. And so I think going into any business expecting to just get blindsided almost every day you wake up and just be ready. Okay, great. This happened. Here's our plan. And I also think there's this, we talk about risk a little bit. The smartest people I've ever been around, including Troy, calculate their risk really well. They're not just out there swinging for the fences without a backup plan. Oftentimes they're swinging the fences and know what the backup plan is mid swing.
Yeah.
And I love that about being around successful people because you learn from that and say, hey, yeah, there's risk, but it's calculated. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's failure, but you're already ready to have the next plan. And so I think that culture of being ready for that, I don't think that's taught or talked enough about because, it builds a fire within you where it's expected. Mm-hmm. And sometimes young entrepreneurs I'll talk to who come in and just be completely devastated or depressed about, this is how I thought I was going to go. It didn't go that way. Here's where I am. I don't know what to do. And I'm like, really? You thought it was going to go that way?
No.
You know, well, you know, it's funny, but when you live in the age of reality TV, everybody that's thinks true. That you're going to have this miraculous outcome. And that's just the way that it works.
Yeah.
I had an opportunity to work with some students in a classroom setting. And the initial feedback for some of the teams that were participating is they were ready to drop out. And you kind of had to take them under your wing and say, no, we want you to keep trying. Failure is going to be part of your success. And ultimately, these teams came back around. They stepped back up to the plate and they delivered a far better presentation, more so than what they knew they were capable of.
Yeah.
And that's the learning experience that really the entrepreneur needs to go through. Very few people, I think, are probably hardwired to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Yeah. Society, you know, says, hey, this is the great.
Well, and how many times do we say this? We all, we will not be defined by our successes.
No.
Yeah.
They'll be part of who we are, but we will be defined by our failures and how we respond to those, period. That's for everyone. That's in your personal life. It's in your it's in your business life. That's where character is built, right? That's where you become who you become is going to be through those things. And I just don't think people going into that. I think so many people I know can say, well, I'm defined by my success. No. You were defined by how you respond to your failure.
See, that was one of the things that was intriguing. I was working with a company that made a phenomenal product. And we were going through these mentor sessions. And so you have this guy running a $1 billion hedge fund saying, no, this is the way you should do your business. And the next guy in line was a serial entrepreneur who had taken two companies public. And he was saying, no, I disagree. You need to do your business this way. And the next person was like the top IP attorney in the state, different opinion. And the entrepreneur was getting more and more frustrated. And to the point where saying, I can't make everybody happy. This isn't working. And the point that we had to make to the entrepreneur was, look, you're doing something that none of these guys have ever done before.
Sure.
They're all right. And they're all wrong.
Yeah. And they might all be
wrong. Yeah. I call it conflicting truths. If you took anyone on a lie detector test about their favorite sports team, the truth is you know, the Raiders are the greatest. The truth is the Rams are the greatest. And they would both pass. Mm-hmm. But this conflicting truth, if you take a rabbi and a priest and you ask them which one's the truth, they're both going to pass the test. In business, it's the same thing. And I call them conflicting truths. That the truth is that that attorney's right. But the truth is, so is that serial entrepreneur. You got to find your truth. You got to find the truth is, I guarantee, by the way, I think you need to talk more about entrepreneurialism. I really do believe that. I haven't heard that story at all. Like, you need to talk more about that. That lights me up. The truth is he disrupts. The truth is you disrupt. The truth is I disrupt. And the truth is it's not about our successes. It's about our failures and how fast we recovered from them.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the interesting part is I think what the network does is it creates a diversity, a culture of diversity that gives you the options.
Yeah.
Point. You can see blind spots that you otherwise wouldn't see.
Yep.
It teaches you to work on your business instead of in your business. Mm-hmm. And that's a real problem that entrepreneurs have sometimes.
How do we participate as investors in Idaho, as innovators in Idaho? Are you looking for more deal submission? Are you looking for more mentors? Is there
all of the above?
All the above.
And we're looking for checks. The biggest thing that we, you know, that needs to happen is I think we're seeing a percolation of entrepreneurship in Idaho like never before. We're seeing in-migration of innovators, of talent that's coming in. I think you're seeing some great ideas. Last year, we had 10 companies go to Investor's Choice out of Idaho. It was half of the conference.
Wow.
And some of those companies are coming home with money.
Wow.
So there's a spotlight here. But we need people writing checks so these companies go out and change the world.
Investor checks or checks Correct. Donated to the organization?
Both. I mean, our program, there is a cost to it. We are a 501c3. You know, if people are looking to support the Idaho community, what we're doing is we're enabling companies to become job creators. Mm-hmm. 98% of all new jobs are going to be created by small businesses, mm-hmm. not large enterprises. These particular companies have the ability to scale and grow much more rapidly than the average startup. That's why we focus on them. So if that's a belief that people have, if they support developing the economy in that way, we've got a program that makes a difference. So last year, the combined companies we have data for 2018. I haven't seen the 19 numbers yet. But for the companies that we worked with in 2018 and the alumni companies that we've taught this skill to, they combined to raise about $16 million in early stage capital in Idaho.
Wow.
Wow.
Now, that's a big deal. If you look at housing and urban development, it would suggest that for every $35,000 that you raise in an economy, you create or influence the creation of one new job, direct and indirect. You use that logic, our alumni companies drove or influenced the creation of nearly 440 jobs.
Yeah.
Our program to deliver to market is about $250,000 a year. So you're talking about job creation at less than $1,000 per job.
And economics is your background, correct?
Banking is my background.
Banking is your background.
So I pay a lot.
But you see those numbers. Yeah, you see all these
numbers. Yeah, if you're not developing a market, mm-hmm. you know, what this program does in my mind is it allows Idaho to bring in more wealth creators. Mm. And that wealth benefits everybody in Idaho.
Yeah.
It creates more jobs. It creates a bigger tax base. It enables Idaho to have more services. So that's the reason and the passion why I got involved.
Awesome.
Last question.
Yep.
Why should we love the blue? Why should we love Boise State?
Well, I'm an alumni, so I have a biased answer. But, you know, I think what you see right now, particularly with President Trump's vision, is the goal of Boise State is to become the most innovative university in the nation. And I think you have the building blocks where now we have the fastest growing research institution in terms of number of new PhD programs.
Wow.
This becomes a foundational resource within the community to help entrepreneurs. And we can work in partnership with other providers of higher education. So Boise State is a leader in that arena. But I would say champion higher education at large for the benefit of developing talent here. We need to support the entrepreneurs so that they're creating the jobs to retain that talent in this marketplace. And we can see a return on the investment in that education, though.
Solid answer for me. Solid. How do we get a hold of you if we want to submit to be an investor or be a mentor?
So you can find me at Boise State. It's just John Williamson at boisestate.com. I do want to make one quick plug. We will have an event on April 7th.
Oh, fantastic.
At the Stickle Sky Center. It's going to be focused on women entrepreneurs. It's interesting. Women entrepreneurs, there's a lot of data out there that says they're going to be taking over more and more of the wealth mm-hmm. in terms of entrepreneurship. They're very effective managers. Yet for all of the startups, they receive about less than 3% of total VC funding.
Really? So this event for women entrepreneurs mm-hmm. is going to be at the Stuckle Center?
Yep.
And April?
April 7th.
April
7th. It's an all-day conference that starts at 7:30. You can find it on Eventbrite. It's We Rock 2020 Boise at eventbrite.com. But We Rock stands for Women Entrepreneurs Realizing Opportunities for Capital.
Wow. John, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, John. This was great. Yeah. Appreciate it.
It was awesome.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Everybody, that's Inspire Excellence. Once again, John Williamson.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks.
You've been listening to the Inspire Excellence podcast. We invite you to find something that inspires you this week. Join us again for our next episode.